Hey, this is Nikki Digital from New York City, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 90. Peak Design is at it again. In this episode, Peak Design has a few more hits in the works. A photographer does a shoot in a nuclear exclusion zone. Police in the UK say photographing women without their permission is a hate crime. The strongest filters ever are in the works. And DJI's drones can now zoom, to the dismay of your neighbor's wife. All that and more in episode 90 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Nikki, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. If you live in New York City and enjoy a night out at the clubs, you've surely come across Nicholas Rhodes, better known as Nikki Digital. For many years, he's been a fixture of the downtown nightlife scene, and now he has a street portrait project which will be released as a quarterly print magazine called Scene and Be Zine. If you happen to listen to this episode before Wednesday, July 20th, 2016, you might want to drop by the release party for the magazine being held over at the Lomography Gallery Store at 41 West 8th Street in New York City. The event runs from 6 to 9 p.m. that day, and if you do drop by, make sure you tell Nikki you said hi from us. He's doing some really cool things with this project, and that is shooting these portraits in natural light using a specific lens. And of this, Nikki says, quote, "The new daguerreotype Achromat lens uses light in a playful and often unpredictable way. This presented a unique opportunity for me to use light in a way I couldn't control, to capture portraits of close friends and new acquaintances," end quote. If you'd like to see all of this and see what Nikki's work looks like and learn more about this new zine that he has, head on over to his website at nikkidigital.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 90 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. If you haven't done so yet, hit that subscribe button. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. If you have a bag by Peak Design, you love it. I mean, that's fairly safe to say. I have yet to meet anyone who didn't absolutely rave about their Peak Design bag. Same thing with Think Tank Photo. You seriously just can't kill that stuff. It's so well made and worth the extra bit of money you'll pay for them. And it's like we say about tripods. You can either buy a good one once and spend a little bit more, or buy three or four substandard ones and end up paying more than you would have on just a really good one. Now, you may remember that last year, Peak Design had an incredibly successful Kickstarter campaign for its Everyday Messenger bag, which photographer Trey Ratcliffe helped design. And you know what? That is a huge understatement, because they only wanted to raise $100,000 US, and in the end, raised just under $5 million instead. The bag was a massive hit, and it's perhaps the best bag I've ever seen. If it's not perfect, it is pretty darn close to it. So with that success and all they've learned in designing great bags, they're at it again with a new Kickstarter campaign, this time expanding the everyday lineup to include a backpack, a tote, and a sling. While these bags are, of course, great for cameras, the everyday line is just as the name implies, and they're meant to be used every darn day of the week with whatever you want to put in them. Contrast that with dedicated camera bags that pretty much just hold our camera gear, and you can't really use them practically for anything else. Of these bags, Peak Design says, quote, "We cut our teeth in the camera accessories world, and these bags are ideal for photographers or anybody who wants to carry a camera around. But let's make one thing abundantly clear. These ain't just camera bags. Adventurers, travelers, commuters, cyclists, parents, and everyone in between, we made these bags for you," end quote. Inside these bags comes their flexible dividers so you can customize them to your heart's content. And there are plenty of zips, pockets, and hatches in the bag so you can put pretty much anything in there where you need it to be and make sure it stays put. The material is weatherproofed, and if you've ever handled one of Peak Design's bags, you're familiar with the ample amount of padding that's in them. They're available in both charcoal with red accents and black trim, and ash, which features blue leather accents with black trim. Their everyday backpack is available in 20 and 30 liter versions, featuring dual weatherproof side zips, a magnetic top enclosure, 10 liters of internal expansion, a dedicated laptop pocket, a dedicated pass-through for luggage, that's a pretty nice touch, back panels which help release heat, a key tether, and a briefcase-style carry option. You know, many of these things you don't see in other bags, let alone all in one bag, and done so well. Now, the everyday tote features dual side access, a magnetic enclosure, a versatile strap system, laptop compartment, a key anchor, and a luggage pass-through. Their sling has two large compartments, a compact design, a sleeve for smaller notebooks and tablets, and also features a luggage pass-through. If you ever get a chance to check one of these bags out in person, you're going to be impressed with the quality. I mean, they are ridiculously well made. I think you're going to be surprised just how high a quality these things are. They're the kind of bags that if you take care of them, you will have them for many, many decades. I don't think anyone's going to be surprised that as of this recording, with a full 55 days to go, Peak Design has already raised an astonishing $1.4 million US. Now, they only needed to raise $500,000, and at this rate, I think that they might easily top $10 million by the time this thing is all said and done. If you're interested in the sling, tote, backpack 20, or backpack 30, you can get them all for a pledge of $125, $155, $199, or $229 US respectively. And they say these bags will start shipping sometime in December 2016 if this campaign goes well. Remember, like I say, Kickstarter is not a store and there's always a chance that you won't get what you back. But seeing as how it's Peak Design and as successful as they've been in the past, I think you're probably good here. Now, if you'd like the link to their Kickstarter campaign, hit the show notes for episode 90 at petapixel.com/podcast. These are great bags. You got to check them out. They might be exactly what you're looking for. And if you got that kind of cash and you take care of these bags, you'll be very happy for many years to come. Next. I don't like to criticize one's art, especially if they're a photographer, but you do something incredibly dangerous or just plain stupid, and I'm going to call you out on it. I'm talking about stuff like rooftopping, shooting on train tracks, both of which are illegal, by the way, and let's add to that list, shooting in a radioactive ghost town, such as the one near the Fukushima nuclear power plant in Japan. An act so incredibly stupid, I can't believe that someone actually did it. But they did. I know you're thinking the same thing I am. Good luck having children now. You may remember that back in 2011, an earthquake and the resulting tsunami killed over 20,000 people, causing a major evacuation of a 20-kilometer zone around the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. That's a nearly 12.5-mile zone where humans should no longer be, and for good reason. It's incredibly dangerous and will be for a long, long time. And despite all that, 27-year-old urban exploration photographer Kiao Wee Long of Malaysia thought it would be a good idea to go there and make some photographs. Guess what? It wasn't a good idea. Sure, Wee and many others are talking about him, and that's what he was going for, of course. But this is a cautionary tale on what not to do. It's just not worth risking your health, of course. The apocalyptic world that he entered for this foolish shoot is largely unchanged since it was abandoned on March 11, 2011. And as high concept as this may be, why? Just why? The photographer and his equally foolish assistants drove 4 hours, then hiked into the exclusion zone through 25 kilometers of woods using GPS starting at 2 o'clock in the morning. They spent 12 hours exposing themselves to unhealthy levels of radiation as they explored and photographed the eerie place where people once lived their lives before the nuclear disaster. See, for most of us, the words nuclear disaster is all we need to know about the place. We're not going anywhere near it, no matter how cool the photos would be. Now, this part is just going to blow your mind. And if this isn't a massive clue that you're not supposed to be where you are, I just don't know what is. He says, quote, "When I entered the red zone, I could feel a burning sensation in my eyes and a thick chemical smell in the air. The radiation level is still very high in the red zone. Not many people have seen this town for the last 5 years." End quote. Well, yeah, dude, because it's dangerous. That was a sign, brother. For real. If you go anywhere to do a shoot and you've got a burning sensation in your eyes and you smell a thick chemical smell in the air, and it's 5 years after the event that caused that stuff happened, that's probably a sign that you shouldn't be there. Now, while he was there doing all this nonsense, he didn't find many cars, but eerily, 5 years since the accident, the streetlights were still working. He says that he saw very few signs of life, of course, aside from a few cats and a dog that actually attacked him, and he had to fight it off with his tripod. CNN reports that he entered the area without protective clothing because he accidentally left the money, which was 300,000 Japanese yen, or about $2,800 US currently, in a restaurant in Tokyo. Think about this here. He left $2,800 US in a restaurant, and he's going into a nuclear exclusion zone. That's all you need to know. Despite all that nonsense, the photographer gave his assistants the option not to go into the nuclear exclusion zone with him after all, but they foolishly chose to go with him. I always talk about photo projects and how they can inspire you and others, but please don't do what these men did. It's extremely foolish and pointless. Is it really worth the potential health ramifications to you? I don't think it is. In fact, I know it's not. But this guy is known for doing other crazy things like boarding down an active volcano and climbing to the tops of buildings that he has no business being atop, so it's clear what he's all about here. And you know what? Maybe at some point we're going to be doing his obituary here on the show. I know, that was dark, but hey, it's possible. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, on average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. Gorilla Glass is awesome. It just is. If you've got something that's made of Corning Gorilla Glass, you've got something that was designed to last. Now, many people don't know this, but tests have shown that most impacts to your UV filter is also going to damage the front element of your lens as well. And for me, I hate UV filters, as you guys know. They're just useless. I prefer a lens hood to protect the front element. It does a great job of it. It also keeps extraneous light out, and that's all very good. Unless there's a high likelihood that something is going to hit that front element, for sure, I say just don't use them. Why introduce something into the optical chain that wasn't designed to be there if you don't have to, especially if it's cheap? Well, Aurora Aperture wants to up the game in the filter market with the introduction of the world's toughest filters utilizing Gorilla Glass. You might remember that back in February 2016, they introduced the world's most powerful ND filter, and now they've announced two incredibly tough filters, their Power UV and Power CPL. So basically, a UV filter and a circular polarizer, respectively. Both of these filters feature Corning Gorilla Glass 3 and handily pass the drop ball test that the FDA uses. That involves dropping a 0.56 ounce steel ball from 50 inches onto the glass, and to pass, it must not fracture. I mean, think about that. A steel ball of that weight dropped onto a filter from over 4 feet. Most of the filters out there, of course, are going to fail that test, but not these. Aurora Aperture says of this, quote, "Traditional UV filters made from normal glass are unable to pass this test. Some even fail with less than half of the test weight at 0.25 ounces. The Aurora Power UV protection filter not only passed the test at the standard weight of 0.56 ounces, they even pass at 2 ounces, which is 3.5 times of the standard weight," end quote. You'll be happy to hear that these filters allow 99.6% of the light to pass through, so that's right up there with other premium glass. The Aurora Power CPL features an auto lockup design that keeps it from getting stuck on your lens's threads like so many other thin, low-profile designs do. Both of these filters are available in 17 different thread sizes, so many of your lenses are going to be covered, of course. And you want to get the biggest one to cover your largest lens, and then use step-down rings to adapt them to the rest. There's no use in buying one for every single lens, of course. As with many companies these days, they're launching these via a Kickstarter campaign, and with 20 days to go as I record this, they've reached nearly $6,000 US of the $20,000 they're seeking to put these into production. So we'll see if these actually go into production, because they've got a lot of press in the photography world about this in the past week, and they're not even a third of the way there yet. So maybe people aren't excited about UV filters and circular polarizers anymore. I don't know. As for the cost, a 77mm power UV filter will cost you $82 US. That might be part of it right there. Who wants to spend $82 on something you don't need? And the 77mm power CPL goes for $125. Now, that's just one filter thread size, of course. I'm not going to list all 17 of them times two. Assuming their Kickstarter campaign is successful, and right now, not too sure about that, don't forget that Kickstarter is not a store. And yes, I'm going to say that for every darn Kickstarter-related story, because I'm looking out for you guys out there. Especially with these products that may not actually make it to market, who knows what happens. Anyhow, if this campaign actually is successful, the company says they're going to be available sometime in September of 2016. I know, I can tell you guys are all unbelievably excited about that. No one gets excited about UV filters or circular polarizers. They just don't. And perhaps that's why they're not doing such a great job of raising money for it. Are people clamoring to get these? I don't know. If you already have a UV filter or a circular polarizer, are you going to ditch it and spend $100, $125, whatever, to get one of these? It's one of those things that unless it gets cracked, you're going to have it for many years, if you even use it anymore. Next. The war on photography, as we know, is very much real. Just last episode, we talked about photographer Alex Stone getting nearly run over by a lunatic in a truck, and all he was trying to do was a photo shoot along a road. All over the world, with heightened tensions coinciding with the rise of digital photography, people have unnecessarily freaked out, and governments, in my opinion, have tended to overreach. Well, across the pond in the UK, in a statement having to do with hate crimes against women, they've surprisingly listed taking photos without permission as being one of them. Seriously, a hate crime? I mean, come on. When you use that term to apply to things that aren't actual hate crimes, I feel like you do a disservice to those who are victims of actual hate crimes. So perhaps they can be a little bit more careful about how they characterize these things. So in a statement issued by the Nottinghamshire Police this week, it says, quote, "What women face often on a daily basis is absolutely unacceptable and can be extremely distressing. Nottinghamshire Police is committed to taking misogynistic hate crime seriously and encourages anyone who is affected by it to contact us without hesitation." End quote. You know, what's really odd about this and blows my mind is they're not a government. They're just a police force. This is a police department that is seemingly deciding what is a hate crime and what is not, and they've come to the conclusion that photographing people, especially women, without permission, constitutes one. Amazing. So that would basically make street photography with women in the frame a potential hate crime, and thus, you'd be subject to arrest. That is just absurd. A photographer who wishes to remain anonymous contacted the Petapixel mothership, pointing out that this new policy, which the police there have been training for the past few months, contains text which is troubling if you're a well-meaning photographer even. The text in the press release says, quote, "Misogyny hate crime may be understood as incidents against women that are motivated by an attitude of a man towards a woman and includes behavior targeted towards a woman by men simply because they are a woman. Examples of this may include unwanted or uninvited sexual advances, physical or verbal assault, unwanted or uninvited physical or verbal contact or engagement, use of mobile devices to send unwanted or uninvited messages, or take photographs without consent or permission." End quote. Now, that all sounded good until the "take photographs without consent or permission" part. That is incredibly broad. No pun intended. All right, some of the older folks are going to get that reference. Everyone else, Google it. If you're a street photographer, or maybe you're on vacation there and someone feels like you're up to no good, or they just don't like how you look and what you're doing, they don't want a camera pointed in their direction or anyone else's, you could conceivably be charged with a hate crime now. And that is just insane, of course. In the UK, as in the United States and many other wonderful countries that value freedom, you may legally photograph people in public without their permission. If you're a male photographer, you now have cause to pause, at least in Nottinghamshire. I know, I rhymed again. It's okay. I don't know how things work in the UK, but here in the United States, the police just can't decide how things are defined. I suspect that, of course, this is going to be addressed, and they're going to qualify the photographing of women without permission part to include examples such as while they're in public restrooms and other places that you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. Because photographing women in public should not be a crime. That is just ridiculous. In the meantime, maybe photograph somewhere other than Nottinghamshire or stick to inanimate objects. Because I'm pretty sure if you take a picture of a flower, they're not going to charge you with a hate crime. Although you never know these days. Next. In episode 89, I told you about drone giant DJI and premium brand Hasselblad teaming up for a medium format aerial platform. Well, now DJI has announced the company's first aerial zoom camera, the Zenmuse Z3. You know, for the most part, we've been able to say that the public shouldn't be too concerned with these camera drones because the cameras on them are pretty wide angle. Thus, they couldn't see much, so your neighbor shouldn't be worrying about you checking out his wife. He's not going to know it's wide angle, of course, but they always awfulize things and think you're out to do the worst. That's what people think you're doing when you're flying drones, you know? People instantly go to the worst case scenario. It just blows my mind. Well, now with DJI's announcement of the zoomable camera, I can see that this is increasingly going to become an issue. The camera weighs in at 262 grams, has a 7x zoom thanks to its 3.5x optical zoom paired with a 2x digital zoom, so that gives it a 35mm equivalent of a 22-77mm f2.8 to 5.2 lens. So with a 77mm equivalent on a drone from not even very far away, yes, you could see things that you couldn't otherwise see and video record. Not that a lot of people are doing that, but this is definitely going to become a problem in the future. Now, if you're wondering about stability, considering zooming and keeping that all stabilized is a challenge, DJI says that they've updated their stabilization technology to accommodate that. Of this new camera, DJI's product manager Paul Pan says, quote, "The Zenmuse Z3 pushes the possibilities of use for industrial applications. Before this camera, the only way to zoom in on a subject or object was to fly closer to it. Now, pilots in search and rescue situations or conducting surveys or inspections can maintain distance and still zoom in for sharp, detailed images." End quote. You know, flying and operating a camera is a tough skill to learn. That's why you often see one guy flying while someone else is operating the camera. But they keep putting really cool technology in these things, and it's getting to the point where you could actually probably do both jobs fairly decently. Now, the Zenmuse Z3 can fly on the Inspire 1, the Matrice 100, or 600, and uses DJI's dedicated HD video downlink, from which you can get a signal up to 3.1 miles away, also known as 5 kilometers. You can use the DJI Go app and swipe while framing your shot, or you can use the drone's remote control to operate it. It has the same Sony sensor that's in the Inspire 1 and Phantom 4 and can shoot 12 megapixel images, including in Adobe DNG RAW if you'd like, as well as 4K video at 30 frames per second. If the Zenmuse Z3 sounds good to you, they'll be available starting July 28, 2016 for $899 US. And don't forget, that is just for the camera. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 90 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I'd really like it if you did, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. If you'd like to help support this podcast, we would so much appreciate it if you headed over to freshbooks.com/petapixel and entered Petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. They've got a great 30-day free trial for you over there, and it's definitely worth checking out. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 91. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
In the statement issued by the Nottinghamshire. How many times am I going to say that? Nottingham. See, there I go again. Nottingham. Someone's going to make an awesome remix to that. I can just feel it.